Okay, so I'm very pleased to be here in Bordeaux. Thank you for the organizer for inviting me. But I must admit that when I received the call for paper, like maybe 3 months ago, I was quite surprised because optimism and pessimism are not the kind of word we use normally in social science. We are not used to think about us about pessimist or optimist guys. And this will not be a classical presentation, I warn you, Matt. And I will mostly do a reflexive approach about what we are doing and as social scientists and how can we use optimism and pessimism in our research. So, getting back to what I thought when I received the call for paper, and I thought about this quotation of Antonio Gramsci, who is Italian political thinker, when I was born in 1880, I think, and died in 1937, Marxist thinker, and he has this quote to fit with the overall theme, like the pessimism of the intellect and the optimism of the will. He says that we must have always pessimism of the intellect and the optimism in the will, of the will. And I will use kind of these two sentences, pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will, to see what can we think about what is a human right, what we want to do as social scientists, and what we do as teachers, academic citizens, and civil servants. So, my first point will be, and when I read Gramsci, I saw that I realized that these two mindsets, that pessimism of the intelligence and optimism of the will, was really present already in the hegemonic or global water discourses in 2008, so 70 years after Gramsci died. And you have this pessimism of intelligence in all the reports from the World Bank. You can see there's a water crisis, global water scarcity, water wars, and even with global warming, this pessimism is increasing. And as opposed, you have the optimism of the will, of the political will in Gramsci and Dyer. Then, for instance, the Millennium Development Goal, also the pre-basic water policy in South Africa, as access as a human access to water as a constitutional right, as a human right. And you have the balance of the two. Even if you go in case study, for instance, my first case study will be Johannesburg. So Johannesburg, which is the main economic center of South Africa, here. Yeah, you can see the arrow. So you have this discourse about South Africa being a water-stressed country, and this huge inter-basin transfer, which have been built to transfer water from Lesotho, from KwaZulu to Johannesburg, and saying that we are going to get situation is getting worse and worse in Johannesburg, and we are facing a huge water crisis in South Africa. And on the other side, you have the optimism of the will, so South Africa must bring water to everybody. And one point of this policy, I will go, maybe I have no time to get into details about how is it working, but to bring free basic water to everybody in South Africa, for instance, if you see this is a tariff of water in South Africa, this is rand per cubic meters, so rand is the money of South Africa, and this is the volume, so and you don't pay to use less than 6 kiloliters per month, you pay zero, and then you have a rising block tariff, and if you use more than 41 kilometers per day, per month per household, you pay a much higher price. So it's kind of water justice, and huge optimism of the political will in South Africa says that we will bring water to everyone. In Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, you have also this image of scarcity, of pessimism, of the intelligence, it's a desert country, so very few water resources, rapidly increasing population, going from 2 million to 6 to 8, and nobody knows the exact population, this is an outskirt of Khartoum, so rapidly increasing population, not a lot of water resources, and also you have this balance between pessimism of the intelligence and kind of optimism of the political will, and here you have an example of free access water in Khartoum, it's linked to the Muslim culture, and I don't have time to go into details, but outside the house, when you have a house, you must provide culturally some free water in this kind of jars, you have free water, and normally you can have water freely from this kind of supply. So you have also this balance between very difficult situation and solidarity based on values. So getting back to Gramsci, it was not very, he doesn't like this word of pessimism and optimism, so it like was common and verbal so. But he said that they can be used as a method to solve some question. And the method he proposed was, in the old case, I think about the worst hypothesis, and then I mobilize, so the worst hypothesis is pessimism of the intelligence, and then I mobilize all my will to overcome the obstacle. So this is mostly the optimism of the will. So if we go further with Gramsci, so the pessimism, my second point will be pessimism of the intelligence, and then the last point will be the optimism of the will, and what can we do in the research project with the optimism of the will. So the pessimism of the intelligence will be examined towards hypothesis in urban water management, and I take three examples. I will be quite quick on this example: pricing, inequalities, and the question of scarcity. So if you do pricing, if you are pessimistic, it's clear that you have a huge problem. It is because, for instance, in Khartoum, there's an inelasticity of water demand, so that you must use at least 5 to 10 liters, liters of water per day in order to survive. So the poorest pay much more for water as they serve and grow. And you have old studies in 1992 and recent unpublished studies, and the share of income of poorest could go like 50% of their income to fetch water, and for the rich people it's less than 1 or 2%. So this is normal in African cities. In Johannesburg, due to the free basic water policies, the situation is more complex, because as you don't pay, if you have like 1 to 6 kiloliters per month, so the poorest normally they won't have to pay, so the situation is different. But the burden of the water price is mostly on middle classes. And if you see, this is the water price in 1995, in 2000, and then the water price is rapidly increasing. And if you see that even if there's a free basic water policy implemented in 2000, the middle class were consuming between 6 to 20 kiloliters per month, I think much more than in 1995, much more than in 2000, and the trend is that this line is going that way. So now the middle class is paying much more as income, part of the income, as more richer white upper class. So this is an example. I don't go quite quickly under this, but just to say what we did the calculation, and we say as part of the income, so middle class are paying much more than upper classes. So we have a problem with pricing, and the pessimism about pricing, that this is overall Africa, and we know that example of something going as, even if it's a free basic water policy. Question of inequalities also. So I go quickly, that this is the image of Johannesburg. So water consumption in the rich white suburbs is much higher than in township, in your Soweto township, Alexandra township. So huge inequalities on water consumption. In Khartoum, even it's less, it's a little bit less, but it's the same that in rich leaders, which have been lived in Khartoum a few years ago, and most of the other people are also paying water much more between this Carbo system and the informal water system. So if you go inequalities, if you are also pessimistic about inequalities, you say that inequalities in water consumption, they will remain, because bringing access to poor people is financially unsustainable and will destabilize the whole system and lead it to collapse. That's the discourse we heard in Khartoum. So if we bring water to these people very far away with the network, it will cost too much to the city, and then the whole system will collapse. So inequalities will remain. And in Johannesburg, the discourse is a little bit different, because there's enough water in Johannesburg. And the discourse is that we need the rich to overuse water. I mean, to have swimming pools, to have huge gardens, because if they overuse water, this will finance the free basic water policy. So inequalities will remain, and we need inequalities in order the system to run the system. So this is my pessimistic point of view. For the scarcity, well, I'll skip the scarcity one. And I say that, going to my optimistic, now the third point, where can we go from there, and where can we go from this pessimism of the intelligence, and what the optimism of the will can do and can lead to research program. And I think that for us, like social scientists, we have an impressive level of the pessimism and intelligent because we need it to defend it. So as we need it, we are very pros of saying everything is going badly and the problem are almost insoluble, and this we do a huge research program and get a lot of friends. But on the other part, it's much more difficult to say how can we use the optimism of the will. And for Gramsci it was quite simple because he was a communist in beginning of the 19th century Italy. So the goal of the optimism of the will said that we then mobilize all our knowledge, our research program, just to have a proletarian revolution in Italy. And for the 21st century scholar, it's more and more complicated. For me, it's very complicated to say how can we use the optimism of the will. And I went through some research project about water in France. We called for funding for water in territory, water in Africa and France. And at least in France, all which is optimism of the will is hidden. Nobody is speaking about what we want to do, what we want to do as a scientist, as a citizen. This is not a problem. Just in the research program, we will have only the pessimism of the intelligence, saying everything is bad, so we must do some research. And we don't care about what will be the optimism of the will. So I try to go a little bit further and to see how the optimism of the will could influence research program. And I just take one example, one rough example about the question of justice in water management. And I wanted to show just that if you have different perception of justice, of what should be politically, so what you're pointing to, you have different water research program. For instance, if you have a utilitarian perception of justice, saying that balance must be obtained between efficiency and access to maybe market processes, you can mostly work on financial sustainability of the system, willingness to pay of the user, cost-benefit ratio, because you may know, your optimism of the will will be by the fact efficiency of the system, and you won't care about inequalities, for instance. Or at least inequalities will be not the main goal if you have a little perception of justice. If you have, for instance, an Rawlsian conception of justice, they're saying that inequalities are acceptable only if they profit to the poorest, which is the maximum principle. We can further on this principle after any question. And so that the connection in tariff should be highly subsidized. The research team will be quite different, and I have some examples, but I will go quickly, but it will basically be the correction of anomalies of the previous water policy, saying taking into account the household size, the effect of AIDS, and rising the limits of free water from 6 to, for instance, 12 to kilometers per month. And so an example, if you have a Marxist conception of justice, saying, and still broadly, and that's true, equality is a human goal, you will mostly say that water is only a vector of other forms of exploitation, and you will focus on the flow of power and flow of water, study of the social implication of water metering, and this kind of research you find with scholars like Swinidu, Alex Loftus, and also with this kind of Marxist conception of justice. And the last one was the example of procedural conception of justice, that says that study on water user association, civics, and so on. So, in conclusion, the Gramscian approach was quite difficult to think about optimism and pessimism, but as I said in the introduction, for me at least, and I think for a lot of researchers, this is two words we never use most of the time. And otherwise, we say there's something good, something bad, but we are never saying I'm pessimistic or I'm optimistic. So, I think it helps, that was my first call, to clarify the discourse of major stakeholders and also the major stakeholder, the global hegemonic discourse, always with these two parts of optimism and pessimism, optimism of the intelligence, pessimism of the intelligence and optimism of the will. And I think it's useful also for us to see our own position and our own optimism of the will. And I must admit that I'm not very clear about that in my own research, but I was very pleased to have to think about this, and I think that we are already for it, because otherwise we won't be here in Porto. And so thank you for your attention. And I want to laugh this last picture.